The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
But first, the government's Housing for All plan is on track to be published at the end of August, which means several weeks of delay. But despite those delays to the publication, Housing Minister Dara O'Brien insists that the latest plan to solve Ireland's housing crisis will be ready next month. He joins me now. Minister, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks very much indeed for having me on.
Now, you're talking about 4-5% left to work out. So obviously it's a pretty comprehensive and complex proposal. Where lies the 4-5%?
Yeah, just to say firstly, and thanks again, Pat, for letting me just explain where we're at on this. This is a multi-annual plan that's going to bring us up to 2030. It is, and when people see it published, the most comprehensive plan we've had on housing and in addressing the issues around social housing delivery, affordable housing, and most importantly, addressing homelessness. So the difference with this plan, though, as well, is it's fully costed and it's also fully funded. It's a multi-annual plan. Funded right to the end of 2025 when it will be reviewed. So all of that work is done. The money is agreed, which is really, really important because it will provide certainty to the sector, both to our local authorities, to the LDA and indeed the private sector of what the state is doing in housing and backed with real money. So there's a bit left to do, and you're right in saying that. I wanted to be able to publish the best plan we can that will be very clear to people. Small bit of work to be done on vacancy, which is an area I've discussed with you before about how we can use the stock that's out there that is remains empty, how we can maybe work around that to be able to free up some of those properties. Some of those things we've just very recently agreed around the area of the Fair Deal, which I know we might get a chance to touch on today, yep. About, you know, homes that where people are in long-term care facilities, where should they decide that they will be able now to rent out those homes or indeed to sell their homes. So there is a small bit of work left. We're very about 4-5%. We're on track to publish the plan at the end of the month. And it's very comprehensive. It's exciting, actually, to be honest with you, because it'll really point forward pathways to home ownership, to making sure that thousands of people who are on the social housing list are going to have a real chance and a real hope of being able to get homes in the short to medium term. So we'll have annual targets with it as well. So look, we'll go through it when it's published with you, no doubt as well, Pat.
Okay, but the Fair Deal, we talked about this on the programme the other day, and we know there were concerns articulated by the Minister for Older People, Mary Butler, who was concerned that it could lead to elder abuse, as someone in a home maybe not in a fit position to make decisions about his or her property, if the rent coming from it can be treated in some way as income to the older person and not touched by the state, people might just fancy a bit of that themselves. So it's that kind of thing. And the other thing is, if they sell the house, what are the implications? Because selling the family home does not accrue tax.
Yeah, I think, look, we've worked very closely with Mary, and Mary's doing a great job in this area, and we've already agreed the piece has come in by way of legislation about extending the three-year cap to the proceeds of sale on principal private residence. Now, this in no way makes any of these things compulsory. It just gives the person and the family that choice, and the choice to be able to say, right, will we rent the property out to keep the property used? You can rent it to a family member currently, and the income is disregarded by way of contribution to the Fair Deal. We're looking to extend that further. We do estimate that there's about 9,300 properties that right now are vacant because people feel that in some areas that the entry into the Fair Deal scheme may disincentivize a use or may make it more difficult for them to do things like renting the home out, which, by the way, in many instances will keep that home used in the sense that it'll help with upkeep and various things. But it's just giving an option. I think there's, and working with Mary Butler and the HSC and the Department of Health and that, even if we were to bring back a third of those properties back into use, that's quite significant. And it's just giving the choice to people and families. And it's a welcome change. And Mary has done work with regard to farms and also in the rural area with regard to...
Minister, you're going to try to solve a problem that we have been aware exists. One of the other problems we know exists, I mean, if you have 9,000 properties that could come back on the market, which are domestic residences, there are probably a multiple of those which are above the shop and which are not used at the moment. But the problem of planning and conversion and rules and regulations amounts to tens of thousands of euro in this jurisdiction, to do the same in Northern Ireland, a couple of grand, and you're off. Have you looked at that?
Yes, we have, and I continue to, and that is a nut that hasn't been cracked for a number of years now. And you only have to walk around Cork or Dublin or Limerick, and you'll see, you know, and in many of our towns and villages, and you'll see above shops not being used. So we are working on that. There will be very clear references to that in the Housing for All plan. There are things that need to be done on the planning side, frankly, and I think one of the reasons for the difficulty with conversions of above shop, to be fair, was around the whole area of safety and fire safety and that. But in many instances, it can be very, very difficult unless you have a lot of money to convert some of these properties up to the standard that is currently required. In Britain, for argument's sake, and I know I've discussed this with you before, they would have four categories of preservation instead of one that we have in Ireland, which means you can do a lot behind the facade if it's not an historically important building or one that's been specifically designated. So the Royal Institutes of Architects and the Society of Chartered Engineers and others have done quite a really significant amount of work on this. But, you know, it's something that has been discussed for years about how can we, you know, breathe life back into our towns, our cities, and indeed our villages by getting people back living above the shop or, you know, in converted older homes. And that is something that's going to feature very prominently in the Housing for All plan. But I think what people really want to see and what's important about a plan is its implementation and what we do with what we're saying, you know, that we do what we say we're going to do. And hopefully people will have seen in the last 12 months that I've been good to my word in the area of protecting renters, in reducing rents by linking them to inflation, in bringing forward affordable housing legislation so people can own their own homes at an affordable rate, and actually bringing forward cost rental for the first time ever so people can rent, you know, have state-backed rents at, in some instances, 50% below market price. And that started already. So we want to build on the progress of the last 12 months, particularly, again, tackling the homelessness piece, which is down nearly 47%, Pat, you know, in a year on child and family homelessness, which is significant.
Which is good news. Now, the problem with the private rental accommodation sector, many of those occupying those apartments and houses are people who properly should be housed by the local authority. They should be in social housing, but it's simply not available. And there is a suspicion that the prevalence of HAP and so much of HAP is actually keeping rents high. Have you looked at the idea of making HAP conditional on the properties being inspected, being suitable for use, of grading them, for example, and limiting the kind of rents that may be charged for properties of a particular quality and a particular location?
Yeah, I think two things there. Firstly, the changes I brought forward on rents very recently, which caps rents to inflation, is really significant, because instead of people chasing the 4% increase, which was happening now, they're linked to the to inflation effectively. So that's the first thing. Secondly, the state is too dependent on HAP. Now, we need to support the nearly 60,000 families and households are actually in receipt of HAP payments across the country. And we need to start transitioning out of HAP and into permanent accommodation. That's why you'll see in the housing targets that we've set for social housing delivery will be very, very significant over the short to medium term, because we need to start moving people into either social or indeed affordable housing, because the over-reliance on HAP and short-term rental measures, not only is it very costly to the state, but secondly, in many instances, people don't feel secure in some of those homes because they're 12-month leases, they may have to move, a landlord may have to sell. We need to support those families in HAP right now, and I had to make provision for a further 15,000 households this year for HAP. Now, we haven't quite reached that because it can be a very useful way of getting people out of homelessness, and that's obviously a preference than, you know, it's better that people would be in a HAP tenancy than an emergency accommodation. But we've got to see that transition and that pathway out of HAP and reducing the state's reliance on those short-term rental measures, because you made a very fair point. There is evidence in certain areas, that HAP in itself and the HAP levels has brought up rents in certain areas as well. So it becomes nearly self-professing in that sense, that it makes it more difficult for people who want to be in social housing, who are in rental properties, and then others who want to get into them can't. And all these issues in housing around delivery, you know, building, how much we're providing into new stock and rent are all interconnected. And when you start to solve one, it has a positive effect on the other. And I'm very confident that we're on the right transition, though. It's transitioning
out of supporting people who are on HAP into using the money that would be saved to build accommodation properly for them. But that's a process. And if you could get a big lump of money to do it in one fell swoop, that would be terrific. But that's not the way life works.
What about the capacity as well to build? We've got to build.
And we know there's a shortage.
Many
people talking about derelict houses. We have the vacant sites levy. I'm not sure how much money it generates or how it discourages developers who are hoarding these kind of sites, because maybe they figure it's worth it with the way property prices go. But a tax on derelict houses. This listener says, we've got to get councils to find those landlords sitting on derelict houses in every town in Ireland. The facades must be retained. Some landlords waiting for them to fall down so they can build, in some cases, ugly apartments. Let's look at other European countries. They can do it. Why can't we? So people who have property which could be used productively and are not using it, could be just a house, could be something bigger, what about taxing them?
Yeah, and that will be covered in the plan too. I think it's fair to say that the vacant site levy that has been there hasn't worked to the extent that it was expected to work, and that we've looked at that with our colleagues in the Department of Finance and other areas about how we can ensure that there is a penalty if people are not using properties or letting them go into disrepair or indeed leaving sites vacant for an extensive period of time. I'm also looking at measures whereby we might be able to help, let's say, those first-time buyers potentially that are out there. They might do up a property, you know, like your texter has talked about, and give some assistance. A lot of that work goes into local tradespeople and that, and stays within the local economy. But there is an issue with vacancy. There is an issue in, particularly in certain areas of the country, with dereliction. Our programme for government is very strong on our town and on our town centre first approach and on rural redevelopment, which Heather Humphreys and I have been working on, because she's fed very extensively into this plan too. So I think we've real opportunities here to look at
what we look forward to, but other things that we need to do as well. The detail of the plan will emerge, and we hopefully will discuss it on this programme when it finally comes. Now, affordable housing in Poolbeg, 600 grand is not affordable. Even 450 grand is not affordable. How do you crack that particular nut? Because if the developers are saying it costs this much to develop with their, 15% profit or whatever they take to develop this accommodation, then effectively every affordable house, if the price drops below that cost, is subsidised by the people who have to shell out their own money, after-tax money, to buy a home in that place. How do you solve that particular problem?
Yeah, firstly, I'll just, because I was asked about this yesterday when I was down with Dublin Simon on Usher's Island, and I did say, just to preface my remarks by saying I can't comment on a specific, planning application or proposal that's coming forward, but I was asked generally, do I believe that 600,000 is affordable, and I don't, and it's not. I think what we've done on the affordable housing legislation, which the President has now signed into law, is we've shown now that we're going to have a national affordable housing scheme, that I am going to be able to increase the subvention that the state, will help by way of an equity stake on the council built and council backed schemes, where we're going to actually make homes more affordable. But that is never envisaged to be to the tune of 600,000. I haven't seen the revised proposals for Poolbeg and Glass Bottle. What I would say, and from talking to residents, I was in Ringsend only a few weeks ago, and I'll be meeting residents again in that area. People want affordable housing, they want social housing, they want a mix of private too. It's a really important site for Dublin City and for the surrounding areas, and there are many others. So I look at proposals as they come through. I know Brendan Kenny in Dublin City Council is working on that with other stakeholders. But at this stage, really, I think we need to get the stakeholders together. Really, people need to roll their sleeves up and work on a plan that's going to work for the area, but for the thousands of people in the Ringsend Irish Town area who are looking at their kids saying, like, where are they going to live? And that's what we need to do. And I think the housing plan that we've just discussed will very much feed into that. But we need, you know, there's a viability issue in certain parts of our country too. There is definitely an affordability issue. I want, you know, individuals and couples to be able to buy homes at an affordable rate. And we're going to be able to do that with the legislation we put in place now, backed by the finance that will come forward now, in the Housing for All plan.
You mentioned being in Usher's Island yesterday. That was to launch the new $30 million facility for a medical centre for the homeless, which I think is a very useful addition to the city. But would that incorporate an injection centre? Because we know the difficulty they've had at Merchants Quay.
Yeah, it doesn't, this specific facility. I've funded we've funded it to the tune of the overall cost is $34 million, and the Department of Housing have funded the vast majority of that, and it really is a 100-bed facility there for people with complex health needs and indeed with addiction. It doesn't incorporate or include an injection centre. I'm wary again that I've heard the recent comments of the courts in that regard. What I would say in a general point is that, you know, injection centres for our people, I chair a regional drugs and alcohol task force in North Dublin. They are needed. Most European cities have them. We need to be able to treat people who have addiction and issues like this that as a health issue and not as a justice issue, and help people. And there's been a lot of really good work done in that space. When I look at, you know, the Housing First approach that's being run by Peter McVerries and herself about people who have very complex health needs and to be able to support them in their tenancies. We've had, you know, a rate of retaining tenancies of nearly 90% there. When people get the supports they need, they can put their lives back on track. And the Simon community and the work that Dublin Simon and Sam McGuinness, their CEO, have done has been absolutely magnificent. They're going to start building on the 8th of August. And it'll be welcomed, actually, by residents and by neighbours in the area. Have been really, really supportive of the work that Simon have been doing, which is great.
I know you have to go, Minister, so the final question is the same political question every minister has been asked thus far on the airwaves, and that's about Catherine Zappone. Were you blindsided like the Taoiseach was by that announcement?
No, it was brought to Cabinet yesterday. I know Catherine really well. I actually served in the Shannon with her, and consider her a good friend. I think she'll actually be brilliant in this role, and there was really warm support for us. Catherine has been an incredible advocate for the LGBT community and indeed for others, and she's been a really, really good legislator. She was a very good senator. I think she was an excellent minister. She's well regarded and has very good connections all over the world as well, and I think it's a really exciting appointment that she has been appointed as envoy, so I really, really welcome it, actually, Pat.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's a bit odd, you know, out of the blue. Of all the gin joints in all the world, of all the people in all the world, we pick someone who was in cabinet, you know.
Yeah, but don't you, Pat, look at her record, to be fair, and if you want to park it for a second, that she was a late addition to politics. People could accuse me of being a politician for 20 years, you know, and that's fair enough if they don't like it. But Catherine, you know, came into politics later in life. I think she came in with a different perspective on things, very focused on the area of equality and of human rights as well. I actually have to say, as a person, I was incredibly impressed with her. I worked really closely with her in the Senate. Really, actually, very well in tune in the whole pensions area too, and very deep grasp of financial issues too. And then, yes, she did serve in cabinet when I was in opposition. Again, I still found her to be very engaging. And that I really don't think, I think if we're precluding people from, you know, going into areas and working in areas that they clearly have expertise, just purely on the basis that, God forbid, they were a TD or a cabinet minister at one stage, you know, we might be cutting off our nose to spite our face. I think she'll do a great job, and I really, really welcome the appointment.
Okay. Minister for Housing and Local Government, Dara O'Brien, thank you very much for joining us.